It's NBA talk. Draft lottery. One of our favorite days is tomorrow. This is a really interesting draft, obviously, because I don't know which one of these guys should go.
I think that speaks to just the question marks surrounding all of the players, partially in response to the COVID situation where there's no March Madness. A lot of European games were canceled or postponed. And then just a lot of the guys at the top are just flawed to begin with, like LaMelo Ball, really inefficient. Anthony Edwards, really inefficient. James Wiseman only played 3 games even without coronavirus. So it's just a question of, are GMs going to take the safe guy who's not going to bust and be a building block? Are they going to swing for the fence on a potentially superstar that could easily bust and get them fired?
Yeah, I think there'll be some leeway for most of the guys in front office. I think you're right. There were questions about this class before 6 months of basic no in-person scouting, no playing. It's going to be really interesting. 2011 draft just was perceived as weak. That was Giannis draft. To answer your question, I think we'll see teams swing for the fences. Why not? And so we'll see some really interesting picks, I think, when this happens. Going to be very interesting. Man, we are technically day 4 NBA bubble playoffs. I've had a blast having basketball back. I know you have too. And like we said, we've got the draft lottery tomorrow, so we're going to talk about both in just a few minutes. Landon, how did Orlando pull it off yesterday? They, in game one, managed to beat number one seeded Milwaukee Bucks, who haven't looked great in the bubble, but still.
Oh, for sure. And the main reason was they shot abnormally high from three and from the field in general, which was surprising because Evan Fournier didn't have a field goal until the last 3 minutes or so. And this happened last year in Toronto where the higher seed walks in, they expect to win. The high-energy young squad puts up a fight, gets a win, although the Toronto win was down to the last second, while this one Orlando kind of had in the bag for the whole fourth quarter. I think it's fair to start asking questions about Coach Budenholzer in the playoffs and how well he can translate his regular season success, because his Hawks teams were great regular season teams, but they would quickly be destroyed in the playoffs. And then the 2 years with Giannis, he seems reluctant to let Giannis play to his full potential. Giannis only played 34, 35 minutes, and which is 5 minutes more than his regular season total, but that's an average LeBron game this season. Why isn't the MVP playing close to 40 minutes? And he had his warts, but he had 30, 15, and 5. That's MVP caliber play, and just the rest of the team didn't show up. Eric Bledsoe, playoff Bledsoe, looks like it's going to be a consistent thing where he just wilts and teams don't respect him at all.
It's true about Coach Bud Hawks, but I never expected to do that. I expect them to play better in game two, but Orlando runs their offense so well, and he is just one of those guys. He can looks like he can fall out of bed and just play excellent offensive games, so I don't think they need a lot of time to do that. They're down a couple of good players. They were hitting their shots really high yesterday. Do you expect Orlando
to? I didn't expect them to win a game at all, so the fact that I'm here is pretty uplifting. I think I would give them a good shot at pushing this series at least to 6. It's clear that the Bucks have some adjustment to do. They were rusty in the bubble, like you said, and they were starting to become rusty late in the season. They were pushing really hard during the regular season. They were on an historic pace. And we've seen with teams like the 73-win Warriors where you push yourself so hard in the regular season that inevitably you start to slow down, you burn out, you have injuries that translate into the postseason. But just given Milwaukee's overwhelming talent advantage, I would expect them to win in no less than 6. If it goes to 6 games, I would have legitimate doubts about Milwaukee beating Miami or even Toronto if they got that far.
Miami, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how Milwaukee does. Pressure's on Bud. And you're going to start seeing pressure on Giannis, as young as he is, and because this Bucks team played so well early in the season. Speaking of number one seeds losing to 8 seeds, you heard a lot about Portland. Damian Lillard, of course, through the stretch of what was basically the seeding part of this awesome bubble basket. But most pundits said, well, that's been fine and good, but you know, it's going to end. Played really well yesterday. Is that a little bit more substantial, a little fire than smoke them, or do you expect the Lakers to come back out, have it, and take care of it?
Oh, I think it was 100% the real deal. I think the Magic win was a bit of a fluke, but Portland is a fake 8 seed. Nurkic, Zach Collins, they were out all year. They're getting 2 of their 3 best big men back. That really neutralizes the Lakers' biggest advantage, which is having Anthony Davis, LeBron, Dwight Howard, and JaVale McGee all inside. That opens up a lot of their offense, but Nurkic, especially with his raw strength, is able to body Anthony Davis, make him take fadeaway mid-range jumpers, because Davis isn't that big and thick. He can't bang inside with Nurkic. And just the rest of the Lakers can't shoot three. It was the second worst three-point shooting game by a team with 30-plus three-point attempts in the playoffs since last year's Blazers. And LeBron played amazingly. He had 20-15-15. It's never been done before. It's just the fact that the rest of his role players are letting him down. There's no spacing, so teams are just going to double team, even triple team when he cuts in. They're going to let him take a wide open three. A majority of their 32 threes were wide open. They only hit five. You would think that's just unlucky variance, but they've never been a good shooting team all year. And just, they have no one for Lillard. He's been cooking all bubble. And then yesterday he hit two back-to-back logo threes that just broke the back of the Lakers.
Aggressive, you know, the post, and there, I think they'll come out with urgency, but I agree. That would get tricky. I know the NBA wants to see the Lakers obviously make as long of a run as they can, but boy, that would see. What's, besides those two, what is the most interesting series? For me, it was going to be Oklahoma City, Houston. James Harden, noticed today. He's not the only player in that that's kind of known flaking in the playoffs. So that one got kind of cold water thrown on it yesterday. What's the other?
I think it's clearly the Mavericks-Clippers series. Obviously, the Porzingis-Bogus ejection overshadowed the fact that the Mavs played a great game overall and pushed the Clippers to the brink. Luka had a great opening game, even though he had 11 turnovers, which is the second most ever. You would think he'll bounce back, he'll reduce the turnovers. If Porzingis can avoid ticky-tack technical fouls, stay in the game, the Mavs are going to push the Clippers, who are seen as the third best team in the playoffs at worst, to a tough six or seven games. Just the star power going at each other, the fact that the Mavericks, even though they're a seven seed, anything's possible in the playoffs, and we're seeing the emergence of a young generational talent in Luka Doncic on the big stage, where he's doing stuff you'd expect of Jordan, LeBron, guys where as soon as they step in the playoffs, there's no acclimation period. They don't suffer. They don't have to adjust. Right away, they're scoring 40 points.
Landon, if Golden State comes away pick tomorrow, what do you think they'll do with it? What should they do?
I would look for them to try and trade it, since it'll carry the highest cap hit. And as we know, they're really strapped in terms of cap space at the moment, especially with trading for Andrew Wiggins. There's really not anyone at the top that really fits them perfectly. James Wise has the highest upside, fills the center spot that they need, but he's going to cost $10 million on his initial options. They don't really have the space for that. And for a rebuilding team that wants to trade a good role player, a good solid foundational piece, if they can do that, they can trade the first pick, Wiggins, just fill out the roster around the big three that got them a ring already. I think that's the most likely scenario if they get first. But if they had to pick, Wiseman makes the most sense positionally and with upside. I see Edwards going there a lot, but I don't really see him as a super six man.
Well, for me, we talk about them trading a lot. What kind of player, what kind of talent gift?
It's hard because I don't think you can get an established star like Bradley Beal or Drew Holiday a few years ago. And with the way their roster is currently constructed, if they can't get off Wiggins, it'll be tough to really find the matching pieces, because Draymond is locked in at the four, Curry and Klay at the one. Their bench, they found some nice young rookies, Pascal in particular. I'm just not really sure who exactly they could trade for, but they have the nucleus where if they don't really see anyone with superstar potential that fits their timeline, they'll take 70 cents on the dollar to get a guy that fits and pushes them back into contention for the remainder of the big three era.
You're a player that would be. That's what's going to be really interesting, is a lot of times in years we say, well, I bet, you know, team A is looking at this or that. I'm not so sure the Pelicans move on from Hall. If they do, they might be intrigued in that pick, but who would they be intrigued with? There's just a lot of questions about that. It's going to be this weird, great draft season once our bubble basketball is over. You talked about LaMelo Ball. There's an interesting ESPN segment on floating. You've seen it, but he is so boom or bust. Physically looks the part, but there's just the last name and the history. That could really go either way. But in a weak draft year, he does have high upside. What's the comp for him currently in NBA or in NBA history? And if his career goes absolutely ideal, what would it look like? What would be the best thing to go, and what kind of player would he be?
Well, starting off with the ideal career, he emerges as a 6'7 combo guard, has unreal playmaking vision, worthy of all-time great discussion. He fixes his shot, or it translates enough to where he pushes and stretches defenses out to the perimeter. He fills out his body. He becomes stronger. He works less on taking mid-range shots and getting his teammates involved. I think at his peak, in terms of an offensive career, I think he can be a Penny Hardaway type, where outside shooting, he won't necessarily scare you like Damian Lillard, Steph Curry will. But just his combination of size and playmaking and ability to get to the rim just punishes defenses and gives his team a lot of versatility, since he can play the one or the two.
I compare him off. How far off?
I think that's a pretty good comp outside of the obvious height difference. Both are really gifted passers. Rubio, I think, has a sizable advantage in terms of basketball IQ, but LaMelo still is pretty good in that regard. Both are subpar shooters, But LaMelo's shot form looks a lot worse and looks even more questionable in terms of will it work in the NBA compared to Lonzo's when he was
coming. And I saw him at a Publix like a month ago. And I know I sent you a picture and he was wearing his mask. But to see him, and I know Bill Simmons has talked about this. You see these guys walking. Some guys are big, like it's hard for them to walk. He glides. I mean, he walks like normal size people like you or me. He has a lot. I know in the last few years, the game has changed, but a lot of teams still take a big guy early. He has a lot of modernness still. He's my number one prospect. Who's just, without just kind of purely, who's your number one player on your district?
Given the fact that of Edwards, Ball, and Wiseman, that they all have glaring question marks that give me pause. I actually have Tyrese Haliburton, the combo guard out of Iowa State, as my number one prospect. Offensively, at his peak or even his realistic career path, he'll be a worse offensive option than either than any of those three. But just he's probably got the best basketball IQ in the class. He's an unselfish teammate. He's a great defender with the size to guard most wings. His shot form is shaky off the dribble, but he looks to be an elite spot-up shooter. And he's just the kind of guard where he's not going to be a Trae Young, score 30, have 10 assists, create the entire offense, but he's going to fit perfectly next to other star pieces. He does his job. He makes the team better just by his presence.
The prospect. But I think some of our listeners have not seen Haliburton play. Who would you comp him? Maybe somebody that came out in the last 5 years, like as a prospect. What's the best? Just sort of like a...
Well, he wasn't as highly regarded at the time of the draft, but his play style and his body type and his demeanor, he reminds me just so much of Malcolm Brogdon. Brogdon has a better shot form off the dribble. He can create more. But Brogdon got paid a bunch by Indiana. They traded a first-round pick to sign him. He's been a high-level piece on two great competitive playoff teams, and he does all the little things. He does everything well. He fits within the team. And he's not the star, but he's a glue guy. He fits with anyone. He's effective. You're never going to be worried that he's going to bust or he's going to be the problem.
Well, but for me, let's say the Knicks wind up with a third or fourth pick. Haliburton would be a really good fit next to RJ and Robinson.
I think among the top fits, if he were to go top five, I think that might be his best in terms of playing time. Barrett is the primary scorer. Kevin Knox, who knows what that'll end up being. Mitchell Robinson, a good lob threat for him to utilize and a defensive rim protector behind. And Haliburton, I think he can be the primary creator on an offense, but he can't be the primary scorer. RJ Barrett didn't have the greatest rookie season that we expected of him. I see the flashes, and on such a terrible team built where they're playing two or three power at the same time with Barrett and no spacing. I think he could really mesh well with Barrett, and he could really unlock Barrett's ability to cut, which we saw a lot at Duke, where he'd cut and he'd use his athleticism to finish. He adds the spacing and the pass creation along with the defense that would complement Barrett perfectly.
The Knicks would like to make a splash, but we talked about Wiseman in New York, say the lottery. I don't know how well he and Robinson played.
I will say that Robinson has been a low minutes player so far in his career. He's averaged 20 and through these first two. So in theory, you could just do Wiseman, Robinson back and forth at center. But at the same time, Mitchell Robinson is really good and really underrated, and he should be playing more than 23 minutes. If you're drafting Wiseman that early, you also want him to be on the floor as much as possible. But Robinson is a non-shooter, and Wiseman is all about projection, so you'd really cramping your spacing even more if you were to pair those two together.
7th and 8th best odds in the lottery, and they went at 1-2. What's one team this year they go like an afterthought, absent drivers of this draft? I mean, I know there's no Zion, no Ja Morant. Well, I think they're 2011. Though. Anybody worth kind of seeing? I say 2011. Whenever Giannis was.
2013.
Currently, yeah. So that guy could be in this draft, but we just don't know it now, and especially with everything that's going on. So who's that team sort of between five that could really make you talk about sort of it'll all fall together for the...
I can see the Wizards making that jump. They have the 9th highest odds right now. Their bubble campaign was a complete failure. In terms of winning percentage, they dropped below the Hornets, who didn't even go to the tournament. Didn't even go to the bubble. Bradley Beal and pretty much every other noticeable player outside of Rui Hachimura sat out. But looking at the Pelicans and the Grizzlies when they jumped last year, they had some young pieces that had a lot of open breathing room where you could fit several different players into that mold and let them develop. I see the same thing with Washington. Hachimura looks to be a good player at power forward, and Bradley Beal is an amazing scorer at the two guard. So really any of the top prospects can fit on this team that already has some nice young talent. And if John Wall comes back and can be effective, they've got enough talent to maybe push for the playoffs in a really weak East.
You could see him playing alongside, but Wiseman, of course, I could definitely see. And LaMelo Ball, I think he might be the best fit.
Yeah, LaMelo would be extremely interesting because him and Beal backcourt would be minimal defense, but you just have such a high offensive ceiling that you could really run teams out of this.
Tomorrow night in the lottery if they're in it, and just keep enjoying bubble basketball. Landon, thanks again, and talk to you next time.